Hi guys, I don't normally run ads on this show, but this is the family business, luggagewarehouse.co.za. My dad, my brother, my stepbrother, my uncle have all worked for Luggage Warehouse directly, and I've done freelance brand strategy for them for years now. So it supports the whole family, it supports this show indirectly. So if you're looking for luggage, accessories, handbags and fashion stuff, even you can go to luggagewarehouse.co.za. And there are two products that I want to pull out for you here. Number one being Builder Set, which allows you to create your own combination of large, small, medium, check-in, hand luggage, all that stuff. And it gives you a discount for each additional bag you buy, up to a certain limit, I think. But you can get great discounts on big collections of big luggage. So if you're thinking of immigrating, it's the perfect way to kind of gear up for that. And the second thing I want to pull out is Luggage Glove, which is a protective sleeve that my dad invented. My brother has kind of perfected over the years. It's a thick 3D fabric mesh sleeve that pulls over your luggage and then locks closed. It's got a TSA lock. It's got holes for the handles, so it's quite convenient. It's not like single-use plastic wraps because you don't have to cut open a hole in the plastic to use the handle. You can take it off easily. It's got a combination lock, and it's much more sustainable because you're not just murdering turtles with single-use plastic. But it makes the bag much more difficult to get into, and it protects it from bumps and scrapes. And if you are emigrating, then those are two important things, because you might be carrying actual valuables in your check-in luggage, and because they're going to be heavy and you might be going a long distance, they can pick up some major damage. So Luggage Gloves do a great job of protecting your luggage in the long term. That's it for my pitch. Luggagewarehouse.co.za. There's a link in the show notes. Welcome back to South African Expats, the podcast for immigration curious South Africans looking at their options. This week, we are talking to Shirianne Kramer, who lives in Amsterdam, and she's made a home there for herself after an almost accidental series of circumstances ended up with her and her partner, two Labradors, and how many cats, Shirianne?
Just one. And they're golden retrievers. I would be very upset.
Right. I always confuse golden retrievers and Labradors, and I don't know why. It's so obvious. Like, one of them is, you know, shaped like a potato, and the other one looks all majestic and like a horse.
Exactly. But, mine are the majestic ones.
Right. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
So let's start with your life in South Africa and how you ended up in Amsterdam. Yeah. What city were you in before you moved?
As in Joburg, good old Josie, an academic, a psychologist by profession. I do research in crime and violence. And yeah, I'm very blessed, like lucky to have traveled a hell of a lot due to work, conferences once or twice a year, academic vacations, as we would call them. Right. But it meant that I was well versed in like traveling, and I'd been to the States quite a lot and Europe quite a lot and the UK quite a lot for work. I don't know. I'd always wanted to be a mobile citizen and like a global citizen. So my feet were always itching, but it was never really my intention to move instantly. It was just whatever happens. I did part of my PhD in Amsterdam, so I know the city well. I also did like part of my PhD in Spain, Madrid, which was amazing.
Oh, nice.
Amsterdam caught my heart, and yeah, I got offered to do a postdoc here, and I was very excited because yeah, it was over the summer, which is the best time here. Obviously a nice thing to do.
Post PhD, do you just keep studying? Does it never end?
Yeah. Some people will say to me, I work in air quotes because actually I just keep studying. But it's just continued research based on my PhD, extending it a little bit, furthering the work.
It almost seems counterintuitive to leave one of the world's most crime-ridden countries to go to Amsterdam to study more crime.
So actually, I collected all my data in the prisons. Fun times. Don't have to get into Polsmoor, so collected them in Polsmoor and Sun City in Joburg, and just had so much data that I was writing up, and I was teaching at WITS, and I was, you know, I was like just so overloaded with work, and I got a European Research Council grant to basically write up papers for my postdoc. So I'd kind of done the collection of the data and all the violence stuff in South Africa, and then I like kind of went on a plane and I was like, where's somewhere quiet that I can write all this stuff up next to a canal, you know?
I mean, yeah. And I think in most people's minds, you don't go, there aren't many places more quiet than the Netherlands. Like,
when it comes to stability, yeah. when it comes to not getting involved in other totally. People's business, when it comes to, there's not even any high cliffs you can fall off.
No,
you know?
There's like, not any so high it's, anything. Like, yeah, I mean.
Well, there's some high things, well, but not, yeah. you know, geographically.
Yeah. No. And not just geographically, like it's quite a stable. And I think that's really it's such a contrast to Johannesburg because it's like, you know, come from like quite a hectic rat race, almost sometimes quite hostile city. And then you land here and you're like, oh my gosh, how is this like an international city? It's just like a giant village with like people riding their bikes and like waving at each other, like, Dewey, nice to see you. Bye. Hi. You know, you stand in a queue for hours at the store because the one guy is just talking to the grocer about his kids and his plants and his cousin, and everyone just accepts it. The line is 40 people long, right. and you just wait for him to have that conversation. It's very chilled.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds like a relaxing place to write some postdoc papers. It's also, I know that, although the postdoc scenario is different to previous study in that you don't have this massive deadline, right?
No, exactly.
It's kind of self-imposed.
It's totally self-imposed. Really, actually, when you think about it, why would you do that to yourself? But yeah, it's, I had some grants, and which meant that I had to. I need to finish because then, you know, the funding, I had taken money from certain funding bodies for this work. Yeah. So I owed papers and outputs for that. But like most of it is, you know, very self kind of based. Like you have to just figure it out yourself and like work in your own timelines and stuff. So yeah, at least that was amazing because, you know, I wasn't super pressurized when we first came here. I could really like explore the city and enjoy being here. Yeah.
How did you first get there? What was the process of actually making the move for the first time?
Yeah, so not the normal way that people move here, and not certainly not the trauma that I think comes with immigrating a lot of the time. Still cried my eyes out because I think more because I was leaving my cat for 6 months than because of anything else. But yeah, I was offered this European Research Council grant, and my husband works for an international company, and so we spoke to them about a kind of short-term transfer. I don't know, he winged it a little bit, like he managed to sort that out in the background. But yeah, and then we literally, I mean, the university helped me so much that like when I see what people go through coming here, you realize very quickly, like it's not that easy to just land and get on with it. They helped us with our visas. They helped us with accommodation. They helped us with pretty much setting us up for the 6 months, everything. All I had to do was after the first 2 weeks was find a rental for 6 months, which also I learned quite a lot about, and a lot about Dutch culture and renting and legal stuff. So yeah, that has helped me immensely.
Yeah, every country is an experience like that. If you've lived in Spain as well, it's complicated and different. Yeah, you know. Yeah. When it comes to passports, were you guys both South African passport holders?
Yeah. So my husband is Greek, but he's actually never activated that passport. I think he's in the process of doing that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we both have South African passports. I was on a research visa, which is actually a really nice open-ended visa because you're contributing to, you know, the knowledge economy. He was on a highly skilled visa, and both of them can last up to 5 years, at which point you can actually apply for permanent residence. So it's pretty, if you're highly skilled, the Netherlands is pretty easy to get into as an expat because they're obsessed with expats. Amsterdam is now 80% expats. It's crazy. Yeah, wow. It's amazing. It's amazing because it's so cosmopolitan, and you also just meet so many people are going through similar things to you, you know, and you land quite easily in a community that really resonates for people who have moved and, you know, who have had to shift their lives. So, and very young. So there's a big student body in the Netherlands of international students and national students. And then those are seen as, you know, some of those students move into the expat community and go on to be expats. Beyond that, there's a big group of, I would say, age 26 to 40, young, highly skilled, career-focused individuals. Many are single, many are in relationships, but many are young families that are entering the space. And it's, yeah, so you don't, it's not a very old space, certainly not in Utrecht, Rotterdam, Amsterdam, and The Hague, like maybe outside in what the Dutch fondly refer to as villages, but not something we would refer to as villages at all.
Right.
Yeah.
You actually, I mean, when you quote the types of people who move and the student body sizes and all that kind of thing, you're speaking with some experience because you've formed a company called, is it Homemade or Home.made? Because I know there's a dot between them.
So I call it Homemade, but some of my friends call it Home.made. The dot is there to just, you know, it's like a stepping stone for me, like from home and then you have your new Homemade. So I formed this company. Okay. Yeah, it was, I mean, I'm very busy. I'm still teaching and working at the university here. But just some of the things that happened to us over the course of moving here, we've bought our own apartment. We've rented an apartment before. We've moved animals over and like watching some of my peers struggle. And so many people I knew were moving here and I was naturally helping them. And my husband's actually a consultant and he was like consulting me. He's like, you got to monetize this. This is getting ridiculous. You're just helping people for free all the time. So yeah, I kind of started this thing on the side, but my goodness, it's blown up because Amsterdam has blown up as an expat space. I think for two reasons. Number one, Brexit meant that a lot of European companies have left London and because it's such a big IT space and fintech space in the Netherlands, as well as the startup space, and it's English. Like, you don't need to speak Dutch to live here. A lot of companies have moved here. It's easier than moving to somewhere like Berlin or Paris where you'd have to speak German or French, you know? So number one, number two, South Africans are, I don't know, they've cottoned onto it. Like when I was younger, that was London. Like everyone in my generation, the gap year in London or whatever. Or people would move to the UK or whatever. Now it seems that people are like really seeing the value. If you have a family, living in London can be super hard. You know, I mean, it is a tough life. You are on subways nonstop. You're underground. You have these crazy commuting hours of anything from 1 to 3 hours a day, even more sometimes. Yeah, like kids in that city is crazy. It's really expensive if you want to live central London. You know, whereas here you can live central Amsterdam, it's not as expensive as London, but you also everything is 15-minute bike ride. You barely commute. There is the most incredible, incredible work-life balance, but also people are super hardworking. So it's like such a productive, efficient space while also being a really soft, gentle space at the same time. So I think it's super appealing for people. Okay. Yeah. So just started kind of evolving on its own, and it's been an amazing, it's a year and a bit old, and I'm proud of it. Like, I think it's done relatively well, especially during COVID. You know, I didn't expect it to. I thought it was going to be a bit of a mess, actually. I thought, oh no, what have I done? I've gone and started a relocation company where no one can leave, you know, their houses, but it amazingly has taken off.
Well, I think also laying that groundwork back then will be useful now as travel reopens. Totally. You're not going to be seeing a lessening of the immigration phenomenon happening in South Africa. Is Homemade now, because you've sent me a very comprehensive PDF where you lay out the best restaurants, shopping centers, things that will help you feel at home as a South African in Amsterdam. Is it based on, it's a website basis? Are there any other channels or platforms that you're on?
So I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I have a website, homemade.nl. And yeah, I mean, I can share all that with you or the listeners.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes for anyone.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. I think the website's, I mean, it's you know, I started off doing it all on my own, but now I have a guy who helps me because this thing has just gone big.
And there's still criminals to research.
Yeah. No, I really like the website because I think it also just helps people navigate exactly what they need. And our Instagram is basically just a shrine to Amsterdam. So if you're looking for like pretty pictures of canals and beaches, yeah.
Okay. So, by the way, just for reference, then when did you move? I didn't actually cover that in the beginning.
Yeah. So
how long have you been there now?
We're going into year five. It will be 5 years early next year. Sadly, that means we're going to lose our 30% ruling, which is the expat tax break.
Okay.
We can talk a little bit about that because I think it's such an amazing opportunity for expats. In fact, the amount of incentives are amazing here. Yeah. So yeah, we lose that, but we gain permanent residence. So you know, it's a tough.
All right. So just let's, because I tend to forget when people say we can cover that and we'll do it later. And then let's just cover that now. What is the 30% tax break?
So the 30% ruling. So basically what happens if you are an expat, you are already earning a higher median salary than an average Dutch person. It's mainly worked out that way because a lot of expats are obviously highly skilled. So they come into a space where they're already earning a bit more. But then we get what's called a 30% ruling, which means you only pay tax on 70% of your salary. And on an average expat, and you get the rest back. So on an average expat salary, I'd say you get back between 1,000 and 1,500 euros a month, which is a ton. Wow. It's like almost 30,000 rand. You know, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So often what happens is I have clients who say to me, oh, no, you know, I really want to come, but my partner hasn't got a job yet. And I'm like, come. That 30% ruling really kind of ensures that you guys can live off one salary for a while. And really you can. Like most of my clients come with just one person working because of it. Also, if you buy a house, you get the tax back as an expat for that. In fact, buying a house here is amazing because, you know, you pay, if you're renting, it's quite expensive. It can get quite expensive. So I always say to my clients, rent for a year and then buy. I mean, listen to this. If you buy, you can get 100% bond. The interest rate at the moment is 1.3%. Like in South Africa, it's 11%. I mean, and then, so it's 100% bond and no deposit. And then listen to this. If you're under 35, you don't pay transfer fees. So you basically get a free house. It's like, so it's insane. Like the incentives are crazy. Yeah. So you can have a mortgage here that you just
20, 30 year bonds. Cause some countries do longer.
So,
our standard.
So exactly. It's, it depends. It depends on the bank and it depends on your financial situation, whatever, but it's, I mean, I think you would look at your combined salary and your financial status, your age, all those things will contribute to what you decide your mortgage would look like. If you're a single person, you can get a house for 3 times your yearly salary. And if you're in a partnership, it's 3 times your combined salary. And it's quite amazing. So it's amazing, and that's why, you know, people just, expats don't know these things, and then they come here and they're paying off someone else's bond for like 2,000 to 4,000 euros a month, depending on, you know, how much they're spending and how big the house is and whatever. And you know, if they earn it, if they can afford that, then they might as well spend that on a bond and get the tax back every month and own the house. And usually, like, for example, we lived in quite a small 70 square meter apartment and we're just paying a couple hundred euros more. And we now live in 150 square meters with a roof terrace and we own it. You know, it's amazing. Yeah. Like in Amsterdam. So I think that is one of the nicest things about moving here. It's just so, it's so easy to actually, you know, manage to buy a place. Like you can really make a plan. A lot of my friends have also bought very reasonably priced old places and are gutting them and redoing them and selling them because, I mean, the city is like crazy with property. Like the property market is insane. So, yeah, it's such a great place to like just, you know, and have an asset that's not going to depreciate. You know, in South Africa, if you own a property right now, it's very hard to know, like, if you're going to resell at the value that you, you know, you thought that you had bought it.
Yeah, there's that uncertainty on the horizon. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think you have that uncertainty here.
Right. Of course. Yeah. It's so stable. Yeah. It's like.
I mean, like, they have like a 0.01% fluctuation. And the newspapers all have headlines everywhere. They're like, oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, I love first world newspaper headlines. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's so fun. Cat
so
drowned.
What resident? Yes. Cat drowned. Neighborhood struck with terror. What kind of residency status do you need to actually purchase a home? Can you do it on, for example, your studying visa or do you? Okay.
So not a student visa, but if you have any resident, short-term resident visa, you can, as long as you've lived here and earned a salary for 3 months.
Okay.
So 3 months in, you can buy a house.
Right.
3 months of working.
But what if your visa then expires, but you still own a house?
You don't even if you don't live here, you can have the house still and you can rent it out.
Okay.
It's yours. Right. Your baby. Yeah. It belongs to you. we discussed that. You know, we don't know where we'll land up. Yeah, I love how amazing and vanilla it is here. My husband prefers more chaos. So he's like, maybe one day we'll go somewhere where there's more chaos. And I mean, I think we'd keep our apartment forever. It's an amazing asset to have, you know? So
totally.
And I think that, you know, anyone who does purchase as an expat, like it's an amazing thing to have as a South African, you know?
Yeah, of course. When someone's immigrating to Europe, the idea of buying a home seems very out of reach, well, I guess, for most people, because you're buying in euros and because it's you're paying in rands and all that kind of thing. But if there is that kind of opportunity to get 100% bond and low interest rates, then why not? It sounds amazing.
Exactly. And I mean, you don't have to put a deposit down. So you're not like running around looking for these.
Because you're already going to have enough financial pressure of moving and all that other stuff.
And so, I mean, if you think about London, the kind of deposits you have to put down there, it's impossible. Like you're not going to move to London and buy a house in the immediate moment, whereas it's really, really viable here. So I think it's such a good incentive for expats because, you know, you have the opportunity to own property without it being like necessarily a huge whack that you would expect it to be in Europe. Yeah.
Sure. So you tell me about how you kind of ended up going, we're just going to stay here then. So your husband moved over for work. And as I understand it, his position became permanent, right?
Well, yeah, his firm just said to him, you know, we'd prefer for you to stay there and carry on contributing to work that you're doing there rather than South Africa. They gave us the option, but the thing is, he travels a lot, and I'd gotten quite used to feeling quite safe alone, to be honest. When he traveled in South Africa, I never felt secure. And I'd have like the alarm systems on, and we're in a complex, and there's a security guard, and I'd have to sleep with my panic button and several locked doors, and I still never felt safe. And yeah, I mean, they said to us, like, if he comes back to South Africa, there'd be more additional travel than he'd had in the past. And I think that made us a bit uneasy. And then the kind of comparison of like, you know, what our futures would look like. I mean, to be honest, it was crazy. We spent 24 hours awake with 5,000 post-its saying, what ifs, you know, what should we do? The cat was still in South Africa. We had to bring her over. And so, you know, everything was resting on this cat. Are we bringing the cat or not?
Meanwhile, 11,000 kilometers away, this cat is going like, something's happening.
She's like, listen, I like my trees and my gardens. But yeah, amazing. They are much more resilient and adaptable than we are. I mean, she's like, apartment, what? That's fine. They're like, she's really adaptable. But like, at the end of the day, the pros outweighed the cons on our post-its. And we just decided to go for it. And, you know, something that just kept, and I literally say this to every one of my clients, as well as every one of my expat friends, nothing is made in stone. And South Africa is always home. You can always go back. You can't always... The opportunity to stay and wanting to be a mobile and global citizen, we just thought, you know, like, let's try this. And if it doesn't work, we'll get on a plane and we'll come home. You know, we're both very lucky that we have like quite mobile careers that can articulate themselves in different places. We were just like, let's take this leap. And yeah, here we are almost 5 years later.
So how did your career articulate from a postdoc research grant into now teaching at university and all that?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm a psychologist by profession. So, and I taught at WITS pretty much for most of my post-internship career. I did most of my internship in community-based work in like Soweto. So that wasn't going to translate anyway. Yeah, so that was pretty, you know, I teach cross-cultural psychology where they really needed someone who was not Dutch, who was experiencing the cross-cultural experience, but also to students, all of my students are actually not from the Netherlands. So they are having a cross-cultural experience. So it's articulated very well. Then I also teach a course on social inequalities, which obviously coming from South Africa and working in the work that I've worked on my life, but yeah, it makes sense for me. I think we all are, right? It's unfortunate. But yeah, so it was, and I've used South Africa in all my lectures, and it's so nice. Like, it's like my case study for everything. It's so nice to share. You know, I'm definitely not that kind of expat who's like, oh no, I hate South Africa. I've never been like that. Like, I think I come from a very beautiful, diverse country. And it's, you know, it's sad that I think a lot of people, and my husband and I have discussed this a lot, like a lot of people have felt they're forced to immigrate and kind of forced out of the place they love, which is really sad because most of the people here who are expats, Americans, Canadians, other people from other European countries, Australia, like, they're like, oh, this is an experience. You know, it's, I'm a global citizen. I moved around. I studied at this country. I was in this country in my youth, this country in my 30s. And yeah, I think we're living in a very globalized world where that's possible. And unfortunately, because South Africans feel this such pressure to, like, you know, move beyond South Africa, that they don't see it as an experience. They see this as this like forced thing. And I think that actually makes immigration much more traumatic for South Africans. Whereas, like, if you see it as an experience and, you know, just something you're doing in life that's not definitive and not absolute, I think you can have a very different, yeah, immigration or relocation experience.
Yeah, you can probably ameliorate a lot of that stress. I spoke to Steve Reardon in San Francisco, he was saying that it was about focusing on the pull factors to the place you're going, not the push factors, you know, pushing you away from South Africa.
Yeah. And listen, it's hard. Like, you first year, you like stand in the aisle and you're so freaking frustrated that you don't know where the milk is. And it seems like such a silly thing, but you know, you're used to like popping into Pick and Pay or Spa or Woolworths and knowing exactly where things are. And it's like, you know, silly things like that, that the small things like really start agitating you. And it's like, I mean, I live in the most efficient city. Like, you cannot fault this place. Like, if a train says it's coming at 11:59 in 32 seconds, it's not going to come at 33 seconds, unless it's snowing. Yeah. Then it does. Then it doesn't come at all. No, but like, you know what to expect. Like, and I guess that's why, you know, it's, oh, my part always says so vanilla, because there's nothing that's like unexpected here. Like, it's so such a sure thing. But still, like, yeah, I mean, the chaos of South Africa in comparison, it's like it's a shift. It's a huge mental shift, huge mind shift. And you find yourself like being annoyed at people for being so relaxed and so chilled out and like almost so, yeah, it's just a very different laid back experience. And yeah, it's a lot to start accommodating yourself to.
It's almost a form of, well, when it comes to first world countries that do have that, if you look at Canada, if you look at the Netherlands, it's a form of low-level privilege, just to feel like tomorrow the country is going to keep working and I'll probably still have my job and that kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit more about Amsterdam then. So you know, you've been there 5 years now. Describe for me a day in the life of your, let's say, non-pandemic squirreled away home.
Totally.
Like, what's your kind of day in the life experience of Amsterdam?
So I must say, I've had three vastly different experiences of Amsterdam. When I was doing my PhD course here, I was like a student, you know, and like I'd also traveled here as a tourist before. And now I've lived here as like a working person. And there are like three completely different experiences. What I would say is that the tourism here is such a low indication of lifestyle here. And I think one of the interesting things is that the municipality in Amsterdam and I think the broader government in the Netherlands is really driving towards more of a Vienna type tourism, where it's more cultural, museums, art. They're trying to like reduce the kind of stereotypical, you know, weed smoking, red light district visiting notions of tourism. So, but those were my experiences, especially in high school and university age, which is not the lived experience. And as a student, I mean, what a absolute privilege to have come here for a few weeks or months and like, you know, just had this experience of Europe and the university system here, so different from Wits, where I had lived out my entire university career. But as a working person and as an expat, that like totally different lifestyle, you know, just not at all what you think. I think my mom has come to visit a few times, and she said every time she comes, she's like, this is not the Amsterdam I've known when I've traveled there. Like, it's such a different experience. But I'll tell you the one thing, I have a very outdoor life. I'm mm-hmm. outdoors way more than I ever was in South Africa, which is ridiculous given the weather difference. Sure. Like, I mean, South Africa really has like the best climate in the world. Johannesburg has the best climate in the world.
Sure. Specific.
It's predictable and it's stable and it's lovely, you know, and it's not that yet, but oh my gosh. You know, if you are a cyclist, you will cycle in the rain. If you are a runner, you will run in the snow. It is what it is. And like very, very outdoor life. We have parks on every corner. Like the 4 or 5 big parks are there, but like every single park, every single corner there's a park. So a lot of people say to me, oh, well, I have a pet or I have 2 dogs. I can't live in an apartment. So I'm like, no, you definitely can. Like, you know, my dogs have a life that none of my dogs had in Joburg. Like, they are so well socialized. But, oh, that's another thing about Amsterdam. Obsessed with animals. Obsessed. Like, we're one of the only countries that can claim that there's absolutely no stray animals, no stray cats and no dogs, stray dogs, not one. Wow. Every dog and cat is accounted for. They have a Dieren clinic, like a Dieren ambulance, so and a Dieren police, so animal police unit, animal ambulance unit, animal hospital unit. There's an entire government organization around animals. It's really incredible, and they come everywhere. Like my dogs literally come on boats, trains, trams, to restaurants. My dog came with me for a dress fitting for my brother's wedding, you know, like everything. They're there, and that's, you walk through a city and animals are everywhere. It's, for me as an animal loving person, I just think it's such a beautiful thing. And, you know, as we, it's cliche, but true, like you always judge a community by how it treats its animals. And I think like for me, the Netherlands really represents that, just such a respect of nature. The parks are so beautiful. Everything is well kept. Like there's flowers on all the canal bridges are literally changed every few weeks. Like there's such care in nature and animals. It's like a true reflection of like, yeah, the attention paid to the natural earth. So typically wake up, go for a run in one of the parks and like through a forest, like we, there's, I mean, in Dutch terms, it's 3 kilometers away from me is about 500 miles in South African terms. I mean, it's like half my morning run, even less. And yeah, so 3 Ks away is Amsterdam Sabos. It's this huge forest, like literally so big that people can run like ultra marathons in there. There's like huge lakes and like a lot of rowing is a huge thing. So the rowers are all down there. So on the weekends, go walk there, like a very outdoorsy. And one of the best things that we do on the weekends, especially if the weather's nice, is we rent a boat or go on one of our, some people have boats. You just take snacks and drinks and some music and you just go around the canals. And yeah, so a lot of outdoor stuff. Day-to-day life, you go everywhere on your bike. I had friends of ours who really struggled living here. They were from the UK and they went back to the UK. And the one thing that like was, for me, they struggled was because they just were like, oh, it's frustrating. And I'm like, yeah, but you refuse to ride a bike. How are you getting around in the city? The city is made for biking.
Yeah.
The kind of insinuation is that the government should protect its citizens. So no one wears helmets because the roads are made for cycling. And it's so attuned to the safety of cyclists. That, you know, it's actually, I mean, when we first arrived here, I was like, I mean, how can I not be wearing a helmet? Are you people crazy? And one of my colleagues was like, are you cycling? Are you under 12? I'm like, no. They're like, are you over 65? I'm like, no. They're like, are you cycling over 30 kilometers per hour? I'm like, no. They're like, you don't need a helmet. The city has secured the roads for this. That's my biggest freedom. It's just getting on my bike and going everywhere. Everything is 10 minute cycle away. It's just an incredible thing. And you know, like 12 o'clock at night, get on my bike, cycle home. I'm safe. Nothing's going to happen. The roads are safe. It's an amazing freedom.
Right. So, I think in your, in the PDF you sent me, it quotes the Netherlands as, I think, is it the 14th safest country in the world or something?
Yeah.
And that probably includes countries where no one lives, like Antarctica.
Exactly. Number one, Mars. Yeah, no, it's super safe. And, you know, I mean, you have your petty crime, obviously, especially in tourist centers.
Mostly like bicycles.
Yeah, well, That's not petty. That's seen as like the big crime, yeah.
Grand theft
grand theft. No, so look, if you're going to leave your bike unlocked, it's probably not going to be there tomorrow. You know, it could be anything from a case of some drunk guy who needed a way to get home and was an opportunist to like someone who's actually looking out for bikes so they can resell them. But also, you know, you learn how to be in the city. Like you learn not to leave your bike unlocked. You learn that you have to lock both the front wheel and the back wheel and to something. If the bike goes, it's usually your fault, not the person who stole it. Like you know what to do. But I mean, like my husband left his laptop on his bike the one day during a meeting, completely forgot it and realized halfway through the meeting, but it was too late for him to do anything. Ran downstairs after the meeting, there's the laptop. And I mean, I think that's an anomaly. I don't think that is something that happens all the time. I think he's bloody lucky. But and like general, people are like, why would you take other people's things? The crime here that is bad is usually, you know, gang related stuff, like, you know, European gangs, drug lords, whatever. Like it's not like interpersonal violence like South Africa. Like if something like that happens, like it just blows up over the media. People are like shocked, you know. There was a case of some guy who had like murdered some dog walkers somewhere out in, I don't know, one of the villages, but he'd broken out of like a mental health institute. And I mean, there was something, you know, it wasn't like this was just, he was just an opportunistic criminal. Like there was something inherently wrong, but it was such a huge, huge, huge thing. And I just remember thinking to myself, like, it's shocking. There were three murders involved, but my goodness, like how many of that happens every day in South Africa? And we barely pay attention. If you stop at the traffic light and I'm like, there's a 6-year-old sitting next to me on his bike. I'm like, where are your parents? But it's just like, that's it. Like kids are so, and they are treated with such independence. At break, they can go home to have lunch. They can go to the shops to get lunch. If I was allowed to leave school during break, I wasn't going to come back. There's just like an independent living from such a young age. The school system is very Montessori based, huge drive for Montessori schools. I teach, you know, at the university, and I can see like the first year Dutch students here are the equivalent to some of my PhD students in South Africa. They are just such critically engaged students who are asking brilliant questions from very young. I have a friend whose 6-year-old told me that she gets a research question on Monday and goes into a tactile room with like digital software and things on the wall throughout the week and then comes in response to a question on Friday. I'm like, oh, you do my job. Nice. You know, you're 6 and answering research questions. Like,
he's basically threatening you, and in about 4 years or so, she's coming to replace you.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh. But yeah, the school system's amazing. So, yeah.
Well, let's actually go through some of those different points, those key quality of life indicators, and you can just give me a score out of 10 and then a quick rundown on your thoughts on it. So number one being healthcare, what's that like?
Both a 5 and a 10. 5 in terms of access and GP's willingness to prescribe. Access because, I mean, it's not easy to get, unless it's an emergency, it's not easy to get like into care with a specialist or whatever, and you need like a million referral letters, and you know they have to know that something's really, really wrong with you. But once you're in the healthcare system, I say 10 because it's brilliant. Like, I mean, firstly, there's no private care; it's all public. We all share the same public healthcare, and you have to have insurance. It's the law. Pretty much everyone pays the same health insurance. You can top it up to get extras like physio and dentists and stuff, but basic insurance we all have. About €100 a month per person. You've got full medical care, but the care is amazing. Like, you know, just really incredible hospitals and whatever, but access is hard and prescription is impossible. Yeah, my poor parents have become like drug mules. I send them like lists.
Right, bringing and stuff from South Africa.
Yeah, and I mean, it's as simple as Macrodol. You just can't get it. Literally, they will not give you antibiotics. We don't believe in it, and we think that your immune system is fine. Pain is normal here. So, you know, I come from a world where pain is not a thing. We just numb that. So, pain is
normal. So the theory is if you're going to get better anyway,
Medicate. I mean, you'll have a broken leg and they're like, everything, every single response from a doctor, standard, paracetamol. Whatever it is, it's paracetamol that will cure it. The one thing every person has in their cupboard here is a lot of paracetamol because that's all we get prescribed. It's literally, it's crazy. Right. I'm like, paracetamol does nothing. The doctor's like, no, it cures everything. So I don't know, like if my students tell me they're going to the doctor because they're sick, I'm like, why? You can't even, oh, and you can't get a doctor's note because it's illegal here to ask people to provide doctor's notes as students or as employees. Employees and students are very protected. So you, if you
say I was sick.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's it. You have to trust your employees, which is just another demonstration of like the kind of trusting policy between Dutch people. But yeah, so it's not actually, you can't get a doctor's note. So when my students are like, I'm going to the doctor, I'm like, why? To get paracetamol and no doctor's note, just go home. Like, just go rest. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Yeah, so so in terms of access and prescription, it's not great.
I've heard a similar thing about the NHS in the UK where they have, you know, you have to prove that you're really sick before you get the treatment. But once you're in the system, then it is effective.
Oh, and one thing I guess I should say also in terms of healthcare and pain is because it's such a normative thing is that most women who are pregnant, well, actually all women, so there's two types of birth, natural, which is basically in your bed on stilts with some midwife, and non-natural, which is with an epidural. Like you only have a C-section if it's medically an emergency. Required. Yeah. So, and huge push for like at home births. Yeah. Like to the point that if you're pregnant, your insurance sends you a home birth package at 6-7 months pregnant, and it's got everything you need in there. And there are more midwife centers. You don't go to a gynecologist, you go to a midwife. Gynies are for reproductive health issues. Midwives are for pregnancy related stuff.
Everything normal.
Everything. Yeah. And like, it's just, it's like a lot of South African women are shocked because they're like, I was just going to have a C-section. No, you weren't. And then you've got a midwife and a doula. Yeah, it's intense. So that's also, I think, a good thing to know as expat women that you don't have this gynecological care and obsession with C-sections. It's a very, and there's no private option. So you can't elect for a C-section. You just have to go with it. So,
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like, is there a kind of a traditional cultural theme that runs through the society? Dutch are known as quite pragmatic, stalwart, stoic kind of thing.
Utilitarian, so all the way.
Utilitarian, all the way. Right. Okay.
I mean, when we moved here, the food culture was shocking because it's so cheap. Like literally, we moved here, the food culture was a shock. And coming out of South Africa where people take a lot of you know, care around their food, and we have excellent food in South Africa. Like coming here, I was like, oh, come on, I cannot eat another deep fried ball of potato or another piece of bread with cheese. Like that's it. But it's all about eating to just live, and you like get on with your life. And now with this huge expat movement, there are all these beautiful expat restaurants. The food culture is really like in the last 2 to 3 years emerging, and it's been quite fun. Like, and it's affordable. Before it was like, oh, if you want to go to a nice restaurant, it's an expensive adventure. Now it's like most restaurants are a lot of Australian restaurants, New Zealand, Spanish, Italian delis, South African as well. So yeah, so at least the utilitarian pragmatic stuff around food is being a little bit like, you know, transposed by like more interesting things.
Right.
So that's been
updated.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. Because when I've visited Holland, well, back when it was called Holland, the Netherlands before, it was mostly kind of croquette and oliebolle and poffertjes and very traditional kind of stuff.
Super fun, right? Like to try the traditional stuff. But as a staple diet, you're not going to feel well.
Has veganism and vegetarianism kind of caught on there as well?
Huge. It's massive. There are a ton of vegan and vegan restaurants, but every single restaurant has a vegan menu option. There's not a place in this place that isn't vegan oriented. Look, there's a very big hipster thing going on here as well.
Craft everything.
Craft beer, craft shoes, craft hair, whatever. Like if it has the word, you can put craft before it.
No, I used to do that as a business thought exercise because it was South Africa went through the craft revolution back when hipsterism was a thing, you know, I don't know, what it was, 3, 4, 5 years ago as well.
Yeah.
And it was literally just name any product, put craft ahead of it. And if someone's not doing it, then make that craft gin.
Yeah, cool. Totally. Like, that's
alcohol
it.
Alcohol has not been made craft and then do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's Amsterdam in a nutshell, especially like in areas like De Paep, where I live. It's just hipster heaven. I mean, the bakery is not just a bakery. It's a sourdough bakery. And we only do things in sourdough. and it's craft.
And it's called The Mother or something like that.
Yeah. It's Fort Nathan, but it's similar. Right. Yeah.
But we're skipping ahead to number six here. So I guess education will be interesting because your perspective is more of a tertiary education system than, you know, kids and all that kind of thing. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I've had to learn the education system because of my clients, but very different. I think if you're going to move with your kids, move before they're 12. Do not bring them to here in high school. It's such an adjustment. Firstly, you basically have all these mainly Montessori-based, but there are other options under 12. At 12 years old, they take a test. And the test basically guides you through three streams. One is a very academic stream where you can land up with a PhD, which is not abnormal. Like most people here have postgraduate degrees. Many people have PhDs. I was like, walked in, I'm like, I have a PhD. People are like, I have four. So yeah, that's fun. You're like, okay. And then the other track is more practical, engineering or tech or whatever. You can even leave school at 16 after that for that track and start going into more practical stuff. And then the middle track is between. And what they do is the results of your test at 12, they actually develop a very individual based curriculum per child that kind of is structured around these three options. And, you know, if you're on the kind of more academic stream, you'll go at 16 to a preparation school for university. Mm-hmm. The more practical one, you can leave school at 16, but there's movement within and around it.
Okay.
The thing is to enter after that becomes difficult because you've already, your curriculum has been structured for you. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is the international schools are fine, but they're very much a lot of ambassadors' kids and whatever. So if you bring your kids in and they're older than 12, they're probably going to go to an international school and probably going to struggle with integration stuff because kids are moving in and out of those spaces. So you want your kids to go to a Dutch school. And the Dutch schools, like these kids learn English, Dutch, German, French, but not how we did. They're spelling tests. None of that. It's like really integrated into their curriculum. So they come out completely fluent. I mean, when I try to speak Dutch people are like, my English is better than your English. So we're just going to resort to that. You know, they're not at all, which is nice in the sense that I haven't had to struggle with Dutch, but I spent 5 weeks in Spain and learned more Spanish there than I have in 5 years in the Netherlands. It's crazy.
Right.
But yeah, so the school is, I think, amazing in terms of education level. I've seen the outputs at university level. These kids are they just do brilliantly. But I think if you're going to put them in Dutch schools, like it's just got to be before they're 12. I think it's really hard to immigrate with teenagers anyway. I think I would have killed my parents if they ripped me out from my favorite people and school and whatever, you know. But the one thing I'll say about the education system is that if you are bringing your child and they are going to go into a Dutch school, there's something called TOL school that they go to for a year before. And expat parents get quite anxious about them missing a year, but it's not the way that we understand years. It's not like first grade, second grade, and everyone's a certain age. There are mixtures of ages and mixtures of grades. So it's not, if you take a year to go to TOL school so that you can integrate and learn the language, firstly with other expat kids, and then you move into a Dutch school with those friends. And secondly, you're not really back a year per se because you're in a group rather than the kind of solid, more structured years that we understand.
Right. Okay. And also, I mean, if you're coming from probably any kind of school background in South Africa, you probably do have a little bit to catch up. I'm not sure whether you see the education system there as beyond ours in relative ages.
I think it's just such a different schooling system. Like, I mean, they don't get homework until they're teenagers because kids must go home and play. I got homework in grade one and grade two. You know, here. So it's firstly like a very different approach to education, that school is for school and then after school is not. But I think it also depends on the subject. I think that like some subjects are more advanced, but I also have partners that I work with in South Africa, actually, called Genius Premium, who do a very cool thing where they take the curriculum that they're going to go to and the curriculum that they have right now, and they take a 3-month period to tutor the gap. So when the kid lands, they like have already accommodated them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, you know, there are options. Yeah. Yeah. And I also I work with also someone, she does expat coaching for kids. I think a lot of kids are just treated as the rear end of the parents' immigration experience. And they just kind of, everyone's like, oh, children are so resilient, they'll be fine, which I think has some truth. But I think hearing what some of my friends with kids tell me, like, oh, the teachers say, yeah, they're not coping so well. And a lot of kids say, oh, no, well, I didn't want my parents to know I'm not coping because I didn't want to upset them. They've, sure. you know, they were going through this hard move themselves. Like, I think, you know, like the kids' experience is also really important to focus on. And she, yeah, there's like, she does expat coaching and she just works with kids and their resilience and their integration, which I think is super cool too.
And does she work remotely? Is she based in the
Netherlands? She works in Amsterdam and she is Dutch, but comes out of a Spanish family that moved here. And yeah, so also understands that move.
What is the name of that bridging school again? One more time. We'll put that in the show notes as well.
It's called Genius Premium. I can send you the information as well. Yeah, I partner with them and they're based in South Africa. So very cool company.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the takeouts of that.
And sorry to interrupt, but yeah, that's not just for Amsterdam. They will tutor gaps to the UK, the US, Canada.
Okay. Great. So yeah. I meant to ask that. Work opportunity, speaking of, you said that the kids have a very much go to school, go home and relax. I assume that pulls through into work as well.
Oh my God, work life balance here is something crazy, like, to comprehend with coming from South Africa. Firstly, people are really trusted. It's way more about output than clocking in 8 to 5 hours. It's very, even before COVID, very flexible. You know, lots of people working in shared working spaces. Off-site, huge kind of culture around, well, if I have children, how do we manage this? Because, you know, childcare is so expensive and they only start school at 4. So there is a way to, like, you know, still get a lot of your salary and also take 1 or 2 days off. So a lot of parents work like 90% where they'll work 3 days a week each and work 1 day at home and then not work. A lot of people don't work on Fridays. It's like a norm. But I mean, I was reading research a few weeks ago, very interesting, like America, like they are renowned for having like the worst work hours ever. And there was this like big study on productivity between Americans and Dutch. And like the Dutch were like twice as productive, but worked less, twice as half as much, which is very interesting. But they're very, very productive in their work hours, but are almost offended if you work after hours. When I first moved here, I was at a barbecue or braai on a Sunday with colleagues and I was like, I've got to go home. I need to do some work before tomorrow. They're like, but it's Sunday. I'm like, yeah, but I have some emails to answer and like some stuff to catch up on. They're like, but you're not getting paid. I'm like, well, it doesn't really work like that, does it? And they're like, no, it does. Like, you have a particular, you know, time for work and time for play. So it really does pull through and people are very serious about it. I think with a lot of American and British companies moving here, the culture is changing a bit. And I think those people who work for those companies kind of struggle because the system doesn't fit with companies like that. So I don't know what will happen. I'm interested to see how this is going to evolve. The work life balance is good.
I guess to a degree people could almost respond saying, well, you must not be very good at your job if you're having to catch up on Sundays.
Yeah.
You're clearly not planning
to. Totally. Yeah. And like literally like there's a big holiday allowance and you know, everyone deserves big. I mean, the whole summer, no one works in summer here. Like, I mean, if you email someone in summer, you're getting an answer in August, September, get your surge, you know, which is great though. I mean, I think it's really amazing.
Yeah, of course. I believe the studies were coming out of one of the Scandinavian countries, could have been Sweden, about having the 4-day work week as a standard and how it did increase productivity, and you know, everyone on LinkedIn is pointing at that going like, hey guys, how about this, you know, so
it's very interesting.
On the far end of that scale you've got Japanese salarymen who are putting in incredible hours, but probably about 70% of those hours are spent just being at the workplace to be seen
that's
being productive absolutely. You touched on the weather earlier, so just how I imagine it's better than the UK, but not as good as South Africa.
Well, you know what's interesting is I've struggled more with the summers than the winters because, my God, it is the most – it's like 90% humidity all year round.
Right.
And in winter when it's that humid, fine. But in summer when it's that humid, like 21 degrees feels like 40. It's intense. Like, and the last few years because of global warming has gone worse. I mean, the most – high in command product right now is air conditioning units. We actually installed one last year. This happened to be quite a cold summer and we didn't use it. And we're like, no, man, that was the thing, right? So the humidity is the one thing. we don't have, it's not, you know, it's not cold like Canada. It's, friends of mine came for Christmas 2 years ago and they're expecting, I don't know what they're expecting, but it was like 8 degrees the whole time. They were like, oh, it's fine. You know, the thing is that it's sustained. So in Johannesburg, it might be 0 degrees at 5 a.m. 7 a.m., it's like 5 degrees. And by the time you hit 12 p.m., you can take your sweater off and it's a searing 18 degrees, which is summer here. But yeah, it's fine. It's, the weather is not the issue. The darkness is. It's not the UK. Thank goodness we're an hour's difference. So when the UK is dark at like 20 to 4 in the afternoon, it's 20 to 5 here and it's starting to go dark.
Okay. It's the slightly earliest, lower latitude.
But you know, it makes a huge difference. When I've been in the UK at 3:30 and it's pitch dark, I'm like, oh my gosh, how, like for me, darkness means I stop working. So I just don't know how I would be. I'm like, bring out the wine. I can't. It's hard that our sun rises later. But because work people, I mean, okay, if you want to get a cup of coffee before 11 o'clock here, good luck. Nothing opens before 11. Shops do not open before 11.
Bloody Europeans.
No, but it's amazing. Like if you, like one thing in Johannesburg is if you want to go to a gym class at 7 a.m., it's like Desperate Housewives class, you know, it's late. Most people go to gym between 5 and 6. Here, gyms open at 7. The first class is at 7. And on the weekend, the first classes are at 9. Like I go for a run at 8 a.m., no one is on the road. It's something I actually really like, is like being up early here because it's just this, it's so, the canals are dead soft and just, it's so pretty. There's no one. But yeah, the culture is very different. People like their sleep and life only starts around 9, 10, work life. So yeah, it's not, when the sun doesn't come up until after 8-ish or 8 at the peak of winter, it's not so bad. It would kill me if it was like the Hoppers 3 sundowners. So I think worst time of year is January and the sun's going down around 5. But the earliest it goes, which is not so bad. I think it, you know, it could be worse. But still, the darkness, it gets to people.
Do you get a bit of snow in winter?
Yeah, so it's actually, back in the day, they had this 11 city festival. So everyone in the Netherlands has a pair of ice skates. They're obsessed with ice skating because back in the day, the canals used to freeze over completely. And what was amazing is, here's a little bit of general knowledge, the laws only apply to the ground. So any laws.
So is it just the purge if you're skating on the
completely lawless. So you could drink, take drugs, prostitution, everything used to happen on these canals. So it was like this huge party every time. It's very fun. Anyway, and so they also had this 11 city festival that would skate from city to city. Huge, huge deal. And actually 1 year, the king, our current king, did it, but he was a little bit in
disguise.
Incognito. And then at the end, it came out that he's also a pilot for KLM. He's one of these. You never know if the king's flying you or not. It's hilarious. We take off a day of work for the king's birthday, and it's the best day of the year because you can sell things and it's tax-free, but that's actually not the real reason. It's the biggest party you've ever seen. Every single canal has hundreds of boats. Everyone's decked out in orange, DJs, bands. It's just, it's crazy. Anyway, but that's, so back to the snow. So we hadn't had snow for a long time. And then last year it snowed proper and during COVID, and people came out like it was amazing. Like people were going crazy because it was really high snow and, you know, it was just so fun. I mean, my dogs were going crazy. We were going crazy. Everyone was going crazy. And the canals froze over so people could skate on the canals and very festive. But yeah, usually just a little bit of sleet. But yeah, last year it was cold. Cold enough.
And then in midsummer, you say it's high humidity, but the temperatures are about 18-ish?
I
imagine you 20, have waves.
21 to, yeah, then we have huge heat waves that can go up to like 30-something. But yeah, I mean, so this year was a really crap summer, but the last 3 years have been gorgeous, like just kind of stable, beautiful days, hot, like literally difficult to work. And I can understand why you take summer off because it's just impossible, like.
Right.
But I really love that they're 4 very discrete seasons. Fall here is so pretty, red. Spring is obviously amazing because of the tulips and all the flowers. So it's really beautiful,
Weather, arts and culture.
Huge. Lots of museums, lots and lots of galleries, entire roads dedicated to art galleries. I think they're like 78 museums. It was 81. Wow. It's something like, in up there in the but it's some random stuff. Like there's also like a shoe museum. I don't know why you need that. Or a handbag museum. There's a handbag museum. Yeah, I mean, there's some, obviously the Van Gogh Museum is very famous. The Rijks Museum is very famous. Amazing museum is Mako, where they have the Banksy outputs. So taken off the streets of London and into the Mako Museum, which is very super cool. They have an amazing modern art museum, a contemporary museum. So big on that. They also have I swear that the Dutch have a warehouse somewhere where they keep all this decor, because every week would, pre-COVID, every week there'd be new decoration up and it would be some festival. So like they have a floating classical music festival that floats on the canal, and it's on the main canal on the Prinsengracht, and it's in September. Then they have obviously tulip season, and everyone runs off to the tulip gardens to see the tulips, but you also have the tulip day where the whole of the Dam Square, which is the main square here, just tulips and tulips and tulips that you can come and collect. Obviously, King's Day, which we spoke briefly about. Gay Pride is huge here. It's amazing. There's just canals and canals of floats and really excessive outfits and DJs. And if for all of these events, flags go up and decor goes up.
Okay. Opportunity to travel. I mean, you're right by Schiphol. Yeah. I mean, what better travel hub can there be?
It's firstly, Schiphol is crazy. I mean, so as I told you earlier, like my husband travels a lot. I mean, he leaves 40 minutes before his flight, and then he's like, cool, I'm in the air 40 minutes later. It's crazy. It is so efficient. They have 4D scanners, so you never have to unpack your laptop and all that rubbish. Never have to take things off. Like that's, for me, the worst part of airports. But yeah, you just walk through. It is super, super quick, and it's huge. And yeah, as you say, a hub. So yeah, from a flying perspective, hub in the world. But yeah, it's also the center of Europe. So we actually drove to Italy 2 years ago, and, you know, we drove down via Germany, and on the way back via France, we took a month. We saw the whole of Italy. It was amazing.
Wow, and, awesome.
You know, it's just something you could do. And that trip was the same as us going from Joburg to Cape Town. It's insane. Mm. And we traveled through four countries. It was insane. And like, yeah, it's just things like that. My brother came over, we drove to France, and we went and did the whole of like the Champagne route. Every year we drive maybe just Lake Como, like we've done like nice road trips, you know, and a friend of mine lives in Belgium. She's just under 2 hours away from me. It's just like going past Pretoria. It's crazy.
Yeah. Is the deal with driving, is it right-hand side of the road, isn't it? They're on the opposite side.
So right-hand drive and left-hand drive.
Left-hand drive, right-hand side of the road.
Exactly. Right. So this has been a journey, especially for me.
Right.
Anyway, I like wouldn't dare drive in South Africa now, just in case I ruin everything I've learned. But the nice thing, another one of the expat things is if you have the 30% reading, the letter, I don't know why, but you just go and show your letter at the municipality and they swap your license for you without a test or anything. You just have to do it within the first 6 months of living here. Yeah. So it's a good thing to know too. It's like you don't have to do the test.
So two last things, because I'm just aware that we are running out of time here. Are your regular trips to Italy and all that, to some degree, is that about getting a little bit of mountain time? Because I imagine the flatness of the Netherlands can affect South Africans.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's also one thing my husband always says, is it's flat in personality and in geographical space. Like it is, it's like, it's very vanilla and very flat. But yeah, I mean, I've always run my whole life, and you know, I've come here and I'm like, wow, my pace has really picked up. Now I go to Joburg, I'm like, I'm not a runner anymore.
Right. Then lastly, I think that there are different perceptions of the same place. For example, Toronto, totally. I've heard the same thing. It's safe, it's flat, it's but then on the negative side, it's boring.
Yeah.
And a lot of South Africans tend to, I don't know, some people speak positively about the level of chaos and the level of risk that are present in South Africa, and they find themselves bored in other cities.
Totally.
So, I mean, what kind of person would you recommend consider moving to Amsterdam? Like, who's it right for?
Look, it's not chaotic. If you're looking for chaos, go elsewhere. There's no chaos. Mm. It's very gentle. I think, you know, it's very family orientated. It's very, very focused on balancing the good life with a productive life. I think it's someone who wants to be near enough to their friends that you can walk there and you don't have to, you know, you don't have huge travel time for work or for seeing your friends. I think that you can have a very productive, meaningful, busy career here, but it would just be at a pace that is different, or then you can work for an American company. Like, there are plenty around, going around. You don't have to have the gentler lifestyle, but it's just at odds with the city and with the country in general. If you like farmlands, water, being underwater, come. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I think a lot of South Africans like it here. I think it's there's a big South African expat community, which makes it quite, you know, meaningful for South Africans.
Sure.
But also it's very like the Dutch culture is very rich, and it's nothing like our culture, but we understand richness of culture. And I think we can respect that. And I think it's nice for us as people who have very rich culture to be in a very culturally rich space. I know a lot of people who move to Australia talk about the cultural blandness. You cannot say that about the Dutch. There is a lot of cultural richness here. So, yeah.
And then just because it just popped into my head here, lastly, Amsterdam is very much seen as the location in the Netherlands. But what are the rest of the cities like, or the rest of the country like, if you want to be an expat?
So I think that's actually more a tourist thing, that like Amsterdam's the place. I think that, you know, Rotterdam is a massive industrial and commercial space. It's way more built up than Amsterdam because it's the only city that got really wrecked in the war, bombed completely. So they built it up. It's very high-rise buildings, big water features, very modern, not like the old school Dutch houses that you see here in Amsterdam. Amazing food, culture, restaurants and stuff. So, and people who live in Rotterdam love it. Love, love, love it. Utrecht is another big city that I love, but it's very student-based, so it's quite young. And Den Haag is also the Hague is so beautiful, but like a bit elderly, like, and lots of ambassadors and lots of old people. So, but I have friends who live there and are super happy. But, you know, it's also, then you have Haarlem, which actually, if you have a young family, is the place to live. Haarlem or Amstelveen, because it's more like neighborhood vibes with houses than apartments that there are in Amsterdam. So, and like a much kind of safer in terms of, you're not going to be crossing a road and there's a tram and a car and a cyclist and whatever. Like in Haarlem, it's just like your kids can go around on their bikes and it's going to be fine. You know, it's very, very, and it's right by the beach. So, yeah, I mean, I think it depends what you're looking for. It's a huge country in the sense that tiny, tiny space, 2 hours to drive, but vast spaces between each city. So lots of green fields and whatever, and then you get to a village or a city and it's on its own, you know. So, but very close by. So one of the things that I always say to people is, you know, if you want to start off in Amsterdam because it's familiar and because you know lots of people there, do it for a year. Even if you're working in Rotterdam or The Hague or whatever, it's a 25-minute train ride. Just, you know, it's our commute in Joburg anyway. Come here, be in the center, be close to the airport. There is because of the tech in Eindhoven, huge tech location, lots of expats, because that's also what I was going to say about work opportunities. If you're in IT, fintech, startups, this is the place to be, and you'll definitely get a job.
Right. I have one last totally random question for you. How do you have a beach and dikes at the same time?
A beach and a?
Like, is it like the Truman Show where a couple of hundred meters away from the beach side, there's a wall, or is the an elevation of the beach higher than the dikes?
No,
or?
The dikes are on the beach. So it's like...
Okay, so after the dike, there's a beach.
No, before then the dike. Well, it depends where. Like if you're in Zandvoort, I don't even know that there are dikes in Zandvoort, but like when we went to Zeeland, there we were like staying on the beach, but you couldn't see the beach because we were behind the dikes. And then you had to climb over the dike to get to the beach.
And there's sand on the other side of the dike. Yeah, see. Okay.
Yeah. But it's a crazy thing it's crazy. They like shifted the sea.
That's insane.
The Dutch shifted the sea, you know, and built canals so that the water would leave the cities.
And when you leave the beach, you have to climb back down.
It's crazy. But here we are. And I mean, I don't know that this place survives like a huge weather event, but time will tell.
Great. On that note,
come before that happens.
Think about moving to Amsterdam.
I think it's a couple of centuries.
In time.
Yeah. I think we're
centuries
from that.
Sherrianne, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. I mean, that was a really, I think I'm never going to have to interview anyone from Amsterdam again. I feel like we've covered so much. Okay. And if you want to learn more, homemade.nl is the website. And I imagine, thing is, on Instagram, what are you going to, is it search for homemade.nl?
Yeah, so it's right? homemade-nl.com is my website. And then the Instagram handle is home.made_nl.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
But I will obviously send
there's even more to find out there.
Yeah.
Sure. And the kind of very thorough PDF that you sent me, that is something that you can download from the site.
Yeah.
Right? It's a kind of a membership only.
Well, yeah. So if you are a client of Homemade, you get that with your package. So we're actually, Homemade clients get like a big survival pack on landing. That is your pre-survival pack. And then, yeah, you get like bike seat covers and all sorts of other cool things. But yeah, if you are not a Homemade client, you can still purchase it online on my website. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And when it comes to the services you offer, we're talking about kind of getting you at home in Amsterdam, not necessarily immigration services.
No, so everything. So we do visas, like municipality registration, finding you your house, going through rental contracts, filling up your fridge if you want, building flat pack furniture, making sure literally you land, you will go to your house and we'll be there for you and everything will be done. Wi-Fi set up, everything. Okay. So SIM cards waiting for on arrival. I don't know
how you find time to do anything
else. Yeah, well, it's I have some assistance in some places, but yeah, it's been a, you know, it's evolved over time, but I think it's such a nice personalized service that we offer, and you know, our clients really get to know us. So,
amazing. Yeah. Great. Well, good luck with it. I'm sure it's going to explode, especially after all the millions of listeners I have come running to Amsterdam. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time again.
Thank you.
Next time I'm up in Netherlands, we'll catch up.
We'll go for coffee.
Oh, by the way, that was air quotes, coffee. People. Awesome. Thank you so much, Ariane.
You too. Ciao. Bye.
South African Expats is produced by Jonathan Varnker and brought to you by Ping Productions.